a very iconic sound in Francais. Anyway, just to remember that Buddhism, you don't have to be, pardon my language, shit serious. You don't have to be po-faced, super serious, control freaks trying to get enlightened. What a relief. Because if you don't have humor, you're not going to go the distance. Because some of our stuff is so absurd, isn't it? So, in the midst of like ordinary joys of geese, and the trees are changing now, the reds are coming out, the yellows, they're beautiful, beautiful. So to appreciate beauty, you have to be present to it. You're not going to hear the sound of the geese if you're thinking about dinner, even if it's going to be goose. So actually, the more you abandon all the, or you learn how to let go of, or burn out, or purify, whatever language one uses, all that I making, my making, the more you appreciate beauty, don't you? That's, and the more you notice people, and the more empathy you have. So there's something very optimistic about the human condition, that when we understand how to liberate the mind from greed, hatred, and delusion, from craving, whatever way, again, we talk about that, the result is deeply peaceful and deeply loving. I mean, it's great, isn't it? And you say, why should it be that way? It could be the other way. More, you know, the more you do this, you become catatonic. I would suggest that's wrong practice. We're not searching for catatonia, is it? I don't know what, is there a word? If you are, okay. So, yeah, once someone said that walking meditation, they watched us walking, they weren't meditating, they said, you look like ambulatory catatonics. But the awakened mind is not, you know, it's something inner that we do. And then we have humor, and we have art, and we have literature, and we have good friendships. So now we're together, and we have these beautiful friendships that we've been developing for many, many years. It's wonderful, wonderful possibility. So on a retreat, maybe I talk a lot about suffering and how to get past suffering, but I realize there's just so much goodness that often isn't talked about. It's a kind of subtext of our lives together. So just like being here with old friends, in many ways old friends. these are wonderful things, and to kind of recollect the goodness of our lives is important. And we've been told that by our grandparents, haven't we? You know, like, you know, you should be grateful. But then if you try to should be grateful, then you just feel, you know, it feels like a tyranny of some sort. But you can recollect goodness, can't you? Good fortune. And that's obviously a very wholesome thing to do. And in a place like this, when you hear the ducks and the geese and feel the sunshine and see the red maples, you can, oh, yeah. And then allow that beauty just to soak through you, and then just say thanks. Just like bring up gratitude, because gratitude is very contrary to desire, isn't it? It's the exact opposite. And the more one encourages desire, gratitude in the heart, the more that becomes just a common way of relating. It's not saying you should be grateful as a kind of imperative, but when it's beautiful, and you, oh yeah, why should it be beautiful? You know, why should there be that? But there is, and then it's like, oh, Thank you. So gratitude is a good entry into the heart. Say like bringing forth gratitude to teachers and so on and so forth. But then sometimes you think you should be grateful to someone and then you feel guilty. That's not what it's about. If you don't feel grateful, you don't feel grateful. Fine. If someone says you should be grateful to your parents because they give birth to you and you've had a rough life, you say, well, actually, I resent their... I wish they hadn't done this to me. And then you have to be honest about that. And then, oh, this is what resentment feels like. And then at some point, you probably will come to some conclusion around that. So it's never a demand about... It's like not a sentimental teaching around goodness and that, but rather it's like this very skillful remembering of goodness, recollecting goodness as a natural function of wisdom and compassion. And then when it changes, you know, like so you could attach to this kind of a day, but to ask the whole, you know, the next 300 and how many days do we have in a year? I forget now. It's been a long time. Anyway, all those days that are left in the year, to expect them to be like this is just not Dharma, is it? And to think that I wish I was back in Galilee, I wish I had four ears or something like that. But so when you appreciate something and you abide with it, then you're soaked in beauty, but then you always remember, but even this is in awareness. So how can beauty heighten awareness rather than beauty becoming an end in itself? Because if beauty becomes an end in itself, then that is idolatry. How's that? Right? You idolize beauty or place it on a pedestal and then think that's my goal in life is beauty, whatever way you define beauty. The other is the sour grapes kind of attitude that when someone is happy, you say to them, it'll change. Right? And, you know, you're attached to beauty and all the rest of it, but you don't have to be attached to beauty to actually appreciate it. And there is something particular about beauty that can really stop your mind, isn't it? Like you look at the still water or one of these fantastic white pines, and you can't do anything about it. You can only be in awe. Right? So awful, we were saying. Garfield was reminding me what awful used to be about, full of awe. And how did they get, what happened? What happened to that beautiful word? Awesome becomes trivialized. But what is awe? I think it's when the mind stops. And but then that's about, actually, it's about your mind rather than about the tree. The beauty facilitates that, but it's actually your own mind that's realizing that. So how can you bring that stillness to the ordinary? You do more and more by abandoning all the restlessness and so on of the mind. And then that becomes more like the stillness, the awe of stillness that becomes more and more ordinary. But in the meantime, you know, the mind mutters on and you get frightened and annoyed and so on and so forth. And so I think what's very important for me is the idea of things ceasing or ending. Endings are very, very important. And that very much relates to the third noble truth, that there is an end to suffering, there is an end to discontent, there's an end to a sense of lack, and that's facilitated through seeing desire cease, the cessation of desire, of wanting, and so on. And to do that, one needs a tremendous amount of, as I've said so often in this retreat, is you need patience in what you were saying, Terry, faith. You need faith in awareness. Not in some Buddhist belief of awareness, but actually in that existential presence of knowing the way things are. And the challenge, of course, is when things are not pleasant, then the desire mind wants to get in there, rearrange them, and then, which works sometimes, that's the problem. And that's the, you know, it's the skin disease, right? You get the poison ivy, you have the rash. I've said this so many times, you have the rash itches, you scratch it, feels great. You stop scratching, and it itches again. You scratch it, you've all had poison ivy? You've been in a shower? It's just, you know, it's like so ecstatic. But then your arm is raw. So this is the nature of craving, is that it's kind of a paradox. Well, it does work to a certain extent, but in some areas it will not really liberate you. It won't lead to liberation. So you have to forego this short-term gratification of scratching for the long-term eradication of the disease. Yeah? So this is short-term gratification. It feels great. Even though in the back of your mind, you're going to be sorry. Not a good idea. And then you come out of the shower, calamine lotion, steroids, whatever you have to put on it. And then at some point you awaken to the feeling of the itching, but you don't scratch it. And what is it? Why do you do that? Well, you're just so tired of the disease. You just don't want to suffer that disease, and you're willing just grit your teeth and bear it. If you understand how the disease comes to an end, if you don't understand that, then you usually just lose all your skin, and that's known as being a dog. And you look at dogs in India, you know, you see them, they're just like red with, their bodies are raw from having scratched themselves from a skin disease, right? That's a pretty horrific image for something like worry. But the pattern is very interesting, because when there's the awakening to something which is unpleasant, And you figured out, well, I've done all the things of distraction. I know that's not working. And something in you says, no, I just need to witness this now. I just need to be aware. And you abide as awareness with the itching, be it wanting someone else's approval and not playing a game with them, or being averse to something and not reacting to that, or whatever it might be, and you bear with unfulfilled desire, you bear with it, that's hard to do. At some point you see the cessation of the patterns of the desire, and then the peace is really what we mean by enlightenment. You know, that's what really, in Buddhism, Theravada Buddhism, we're talking about. It's the end of that whole struggle, end of itching and the need for scratching. So on the physical level, you need to eat and so on, so you can enjoy beauty, as I was saying. But I would suggest, if you do take on a project this year, and several people have said they'd like to, then realize we're again, and I just emphasize this again, we're not trying to solve our problems. We're trying to see that in the awakening to the whole structures of unfulfilled desire in all its subtle ways, we're willing to witness and bear with it and see what happens. Just see what happens. Give it a chance, as it were. Give it a chance. And my experience is that if I can, even though in the experience of greed, hatred, and delusion, whatever it's manifesting, if there is enough wakefulness just to bear witness to it, know it, not go to the storylines, not distracted, just be with it, then even though the experience is lousy and not pleasant, I walk away from it and thinking, hey, I feel quite peaceful. Why didn't I feel peaceful then? What's the deal? Well, I didn't feel peaceful then because I was doing the work. You know, I was bearing witness to that, the difficult work of that. and then I feel peaceful and I try to reproduce it. No, no. It's just a natural consequence of non-grasping. It's nature and it's dharma. And so, and that's what, you know, like you were saying, Terry, that's faith, isn't it? Like, because when the chips are down, what do you trust in? So when the chips are down for the addict takes whatever addiction they have. So let's say it's cocaine, and they sniff a thing about cocaine, and then after they've done that, they think, this is a bad habit, I better let go of it. But they only do it after they've had the hit. And then, that was a bad decision, let me have some more cocaine. And it's the same kind of thing with the more minor things like greed, hate, and delusion that we have. Even though you sometimes understand it theoretically, even that's difficult, because it does seem counterintuitive. It does seem like if I get rid of this, I'll be happy. And to some extent, you can. But at some level, you understand, and then you get overwhelmed. Your best intentions take you. And then you feel regret, and so on, and then no. This is what regret feels like. So you just kind of keep honing that capacity to awaken, 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 awaken. Very simple. You have to be really... Ajahn Sumedho says it's like a rat gnawing through a wall. It's not a very picturesque image, is it? Well, you want devas and halos and... rat. He's a kind of gritty teacher. So then you get to the ideas of cessation, Nirodha, and that's the ending. So one of the things Lompo Sumedho often recommended to me, and still does, is just notice endings. Notice the end of a thought, and think it deliberately. Today is Thursday. Huh? And then what do you have? I am a monk. I am a dumb monk. I am an enlightened monk. After, yes, there's no monk. There's no monkey either. It's just, what is there? There's just this. So notice the end of a thought. That's a very skillful thing to do. Notice that the sense of self is just a thought. So your mind is rabbiting on about something, and then someone sneezes, and there's the end of that. And actually, you see that the person isn't there. Awareness is there, but the personality just ceased. And you start to kind of notice that in just the end of things, because quite often we can notice that we feel angry, but we don't notice non-anger. And we're kind of caught up in our angers or fears or whatever, but then at some point it ceases. We're not angry. But what's non-anger? So that's another way the texts talk about. Notice the non-occurrence of something like non-anger. Feels like that. Look, I don't feel angry. Or non-greed. Or non-confusion, non-delusion. Just this, suchness. And then when anger arises, you tend to see it's arising and it's ceasing. Sometimes it's so quick you don't. So you got, the more you do these kinds of reflective exercises and becoming more and more coherent in a way of mindful recollection, the more you see this flow, the less you get caught with it. And then when the material is kind of full with disturbances, you learn to bear witness to it. Bear. Over the years, right? It's not like a 5-minute exercise in yoga or something. It's like yoga. You got to do it for years, don't you? So, but you bear with it because you have the faith and trust and understanding that that works. And then more and more, you see cessation. And what happens is that there's no more fuel for this now. And that's the idea that we have. You know, like the description of Nibbana is cool. That's one of the few words that's left over from the 60s. Right? You still use it, I think. coolness. I mean, it really fits in India, doesn't it? We're in a hot climate. Here we think, oh, coolness, it's cold winter. But the idea is like a fire has no more fuel. You're not even extinguishing the fire. You're just not adding fuel to it. So what would be the fuel? I'm disappointed by something, by someone's actions or speech. Disappointment arises. With it, there's an unpleasant feeling of, I don't want it this way, they shouldn't be that way. And that arising is unpleasant, and then I witness it. Now, what would the fuel there be? And what would the ending of the fuel be for? What would non-fueling be for peace in the future? And what would fueling be for the same construct in the future? Well, it would be believing it. So what would fuel that? I'd say, oh, it's just unfair. It's not fair. There's idiots, and I've been so nice to them. And that's thinking, attachment. And that creates the pattern for the next time there's disappointment. It's going to happen again, obviously. So what would be the end of that kind of fire making? It would be disappointment feels this way. Awareness. Awareness, awareness. And then at some point it would cease because it has no more fuel. It might take longer than you wanted, but you bear with it. You might put in, you know, a little bit of water into it, say, may all beings be free from suffering. But you might even use that for more fuel. You might feel guilty about your resentment, say, may all beings be free from suffering. And you're just actually hating yourself for this feeling. So you have to be very transparent in this. Let it be what it is. And then the fuel dies away. And then there's no more fire of greed, hatred, and delusion. That's the analogy that we use in Theravada Buddhism. And when it's burning, you don't know that. You don't know that. You only feel the burning. Right? So you burn and you add more fuel to it. And you do that for 20, 30 years. And then you start a different strategy. And then you're here. But you've added fuel to this for 20 or 30 years. So there's a bit of habits, right? And habits are then like the wood box has got a bit of wood in it. You have to go through this wood box. So those two analogies I find very, very helpful, both the fuel one and the itching and scratching as a way of thinking this through. So awakening, you know, just it's very simple, very simple. And when it gets complicated, why? It's because of desire. I don't want life to be this way. And where does it go? It goes into thought. And where does thought go? It goes into the same patterns. But if you abandon the thinking, which is the I making and my making, you still feel it. But the thinking, the I making, my making, is the fuel. It's a challenging path, isn't it? But I mean, I don't know any other way to do it. You know, if anyone has ayahuasca, psilocybin, I don't know any other way to do it. You know, it does work. It just takes more time than I thought. All right, let's do some sitting.